WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Info.
In the midst of the current housing foreclosure crisis comes word that a former squat in the East Village has made its way from abandoned building to tenant-owned co-op. So while 1970s-era abandoned buildings are making their way to economic wholeness, today there's another crisis and new squatters. This foreclosure crisis is hitting suburbia hard, as well as the city, and groups like Miami's Take Back the Land are organizing squatters as an unauthorized answer to the homelessness and foreclosures of today. So we are joined right now by three New York housing activists to talk about squatting and affordable housing then and now. Andrew Riker is the executive director of Urban Homesteading Assistance Board, the group that worked with the city to convert the squat featured in a recent New York Post article, maybe you saw it there, to a tenant-owned co-op. Frank Morales, an Episcopal priest involved in East Village, Lower East Side, squatting and homelessness activism since the late 1970s. And Rob Robinson, a leader in the housing campaign of Picture the Homeless, who's taking notes from Take Back the Land. Welcome, all of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
Nice to be
morning.
Here.
Good
and
morning.
Frank Morales, did you see that recent New York Post headline?
Yes, I did.
They framed it as, "Sometimes crime does pay." That was the headline. And former New York City Parks Commissioner Henry Stern, who battled a lot of the squatters back in the Koch administration, he and the Post were upset that this former East Village squat called Bullet Space had finished its conversion to co-op, and those squatters were now seen as legit homeowners. Were you involved with the Bullet Space?
I was one of the people that opened up Bullet Space in 1986. The crime was leaving, having abandoned buildings sit warehoused, empty, deteriorating, and nothing being done while people were living and dying on the streets, were placed into barrack-style shelters and so forth. That's the crime. The moral obligation of all the citizenry to meet the needs of our neighbors. As a priest, I follow the dictum of love thy neighbor, and squatting is a concrete way to incarnate the human right to a home.
But how do you determine which squatters, if they were living in a time of great need for housing, who gets rights? I mean, when there are traditional transactions, you know who the owners are and you know who the renters are, or you know who the old owners and the new owners and the buyers and the sellers are. If a lot of people have a need for homes, who determines who's a legitimate squatter?
Well, I think the question is not to counterpoint those who are doing things in a certain way and others who are doing things in another way. We were very happy to collaborate with various numbers of groups who were doing things through the legal means. For instance, I was a legal homesteader in the South Bronx for a while. In 1986, HPD, the city, canceled any viable options legally for sweat equity, such that there were thousands and thousands of people who had applied for that kind of a lease, and they were turned down and not able to pursue it in any other way. Essentially, there was no way, and there is, remains, till this day, no way for poor people to secure housing that they can afford. Squatting is the only way. And I'm not saying that rhetorically. There's not a dime going into poor people's housing in this country. The only way to secure housing, and I think it's also a moral obligation to provide housing for people. Housing is a human right. The right to speculate, even if I subscribe to the view that is a legitimate right, which I don't, but even if I did, the right to survive and the right to a home is certainly superior to that.
And Andrew Riker, one of the things that didn't come out in the Post article is that the new co-op owners cannot make a bundle off the building, correct?
That's correct. This is a limited equity co-op. And one of the things that, building on what Frank had said, that really makes this different than what they were trying to characterize it in the Post, is that there are income restrictions and sale restrictions. And so that our goal, along with the squatters, homesteaders in that building, were to create permanently affordable housing, so that when the people are there, are done and are ready to leave, they will sell it at an affordable price to a low-income family who can then enjoy the same benefits.
Was it apparent at the time that you were converting the building, and that was what, the 1980s?
We started this in the 90s, actually. Or in early 2000 is when we started with these buildings.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it must have been apparent to you by then that you were converting building with relatively high and rising property values in the East Village.
Correct. And so it made it even more important to create what will be some of the last permanently affordable housing that's created out of these old abandoned buildings in the neighborhood. This is one of 11 buildings that that we're working on, and a number of the others should be converting to co-op in short order.
And I guess we should say that the objections of Henry Stern and others to these programs were not so much with your organization, but with the city for not selling the buildings to private investors immediately.
I'm not sure that there would be a lot of benefit to the community to sell it to private investors. There's many, many new, very expensive condos and
the community
rentals.
Being city government, which owned the land, correct?
Well, but in the Lower East Side, there are plenty of opportunities for high-end housing. What there isn't an opportunity for is permanently affordable housing. And as we've seen in this current market, a lot of what was produced over the last number of years, we now are seeing going into foreclosure and was priced too high. And over the last 35 years that we've been working, there are close to 30,000 families who live in similar kinds of circumstances, and there are very few, if any, foreclosures going on in this type of home ownership.
Rob Robinson, is squatting making a comeback today?
It's certainly making a comeback, and we as an organization look to folks like Take Back the Land and Frank Morales, who has a history here, and you know, particularly maybe with the objections to my organization, is a building a block south of here that I think is the epitome of landlord greed, and that's the Donald Trump building. And I myself, if I had a personal choice, that's the building I would squat in, because I think I could wipe out the entire homeless population of New York City by moving them into that 40-story
building. That's a high-rise that's going up right now.
Well, it's up. It's about 75% complete, and there's been no construction on it for about 6-7 months. So I say we've had enough of these high-end condos in the city. Two blocks to the west of here are people sleeping on the street. So the contrast is really stark. And not only that, you have the New York City has its FEG offices there where they force low-income people to go to work. Between that and this building are people sleeping on the street. So it should raise the consciousness of the city that this type of construction needs to stop.
And just for people who don't know, we are at 160 Varick Street, a couple of blocks south of Houston. So that's the neighborhood that Rob Robinson has taken such a thorough survey of. Can you broaden from there to the principles by which you think squatting becomes legitimate? I think you said it for this particular Trump building.
Right.
It's a building with a lot of space, right, on which construction has stopped.
Right. Both of these gentlemen that spoke before me spoke of a very interesting fact that this city is neglecting its poor and low-income people. This government has an obligation, or any government has an obligation, to house its people, but they're neglecting that. Governments are working with landlords who are basically looking to profit, and it's greed. It's based on greed. Capitalists, the way people are thinking today is, the more money I make, the better life is. But the better life is for whom? Most of the society out there, people sleeping on the streets, are left and ignored. And we as a homeless organization say, you know, we have rights too. We're part of this country. Gentrification is changing the way our cities look. And it's time we fight back and start to take back the land, as they're doing in Miami.
Although, was that last year's argument? Because now everybody's losing money and neighborhoods are starting to degentrify.
Well, I don't think they're degentrifying. I think there's been a slowdown in the market. But if it was degentrifying, these same greedy landlords would turn around and say, you know what, we're going to convert from condos to low and moderate housing so that we can house some of these people that are sleeping on the streets. The city would negotiate.
Is it the landlord's responsibility or is it the government's responsibility?
Well, it's actually the government's responsibility, but they work together. Many of these landlords are the ones who put the government in place. They are fattening their pockets with campaign contributions to make it possible. So if I'm giving you a contribution, I expect you to make legislation that is favorable to my agenda, not to the poor people.
So Frank Morales, as somebody who was involved in the co-op conversion of the former squat on the Lower East Side, and as a supporter, I think, of what Rob Robinson and his group are doing now, are you kind of a bridge from one era of squatting to another era of squatting?
Well, I guess in some respects that's true. It's an ongoing process, though. I still live in a squat, and I work with Rob and others to maintain a position that the only way poor people and underhoused people are going to secure housing is through direct action, is to take it. I don't particularly place much confidence in government. I think its government has shown it's unwilling or unable to provide housing for people. So I clearly am of the point of view, from a moral point of view, that we need to band together, that the citizenry is empowered and inspired when they come together and work collectively together. And most people's heart is moved in this direction, that we come together and occupy these abandoned spaces, take them over in the interests of human rights to a home, and incarnate that right. A right is, to the extent that it's abstract, is not real. Squatting makes real an otherwise abstract right to a home.
But is squatting today taking place in a different way? Are there a lot of, let's say, individual homes or apartments that have been foreclosed upon, mm-hmm. or abandoned even before they could be foreclosed upon? Are these the kind of private spaces that you're now encouraging squatting on, different from the public lands of the 70s and the 80s?
Yes. From my point of view, there's no difference between the land belongs to the creator. It doesn't belong to anyone. It belongs to everyone. It's a common treasury for all. And those who need a home, their right to survive and their right to a home surpasses the right to speculate and make profit. So whether it's owned by a bank, a private corporation, an entity known as HPD, et cetera, people need this. This is part of Catholic doctrine. If it's sitting there and it's unused and people need to move into these spaces in order to survive, then they have a right to
and
do so.
And you're an Episcopal priest, so you're coming from this religious perspective.
Yeah, I've been writing
degree.
About this quite extensively of late, and I think it's important for people to seize this as an obligation and also as an opportunity for joy and collectivity.
Andrew Riker, your group, the Urban Homesteading Assistance Board, works with the city to convert abandoned housing to tenant-owned co-ops. So what's your relationship to the activists and squatters?
Over the years that we've worked, the squatters and the active squatting has been a great organizing tool and also a way of pointing out to government some of the flaws and needs in policy. And at various times in my 30 years at UHAB, squatting has grown. Squatting has pointed out a series of problems, a series of resources that were going unused or directed in a wrong way, and sort of needs of low-income families unmet. And the city has then responded with programs. And I think we're going through another period where we've seen sort of the programs for low-income housing begin to disappear and new resources and new opportunities out there. And I think squatting will help raise the volume of the policy discussion until we get some programs. I think in the end, it's not a very efficient way to sort of pass out resources.
Distribute housing, yeah.
Right. But it is a very effective way in organizing and shaping public policy.
Listeners, do you think squatting has a new legitimacy in this economy? 212-433-WNYC or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And hi, I'm in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. First, let me say hello to Andy. I'm a former homesteader. Thank you for you have and all you do. In our current crisis, why isn't there a broad, perhaps private market co-housing homesteading solution that would help people get together and develop housing affordably?
And by co-housing, he means, Andy?
Co-housing is another form of cooperative where people join together and they develop housing sort of to meet their needs, often co-housing includes shared dining facilities and shared daycare facilities, whatever the needs are. So it's a whole community concept of creating housing. I think that one of the reasons it's still difficult is acquiring property in this city is just beyond the means of it's just not affordable. And to create affordable housing requires some serious subsidy from city, state, or federal government, or a combination. It may be that we begin to see as there are foreclosures, as the cost of housing comes down, that there are opportunities. But even now in the larger multifamily buildings, we aren't seeing a lot of foreclosures yet.
David in Brooklyn is not buying all this. David, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, I think not buying it is an understatement, and I would say not buying it also applies to the gentleman over there who feels he can take over somebody's property without buying it or without paying for it. It sort of illegitimizes what the rest of us actually do when we work hard for a living and we do pay for something and we do discipline ourselves to save our money and to pay for our what we use and what we choose to do with our lives. I think it's terrible, and what you're advocating is actually very dangerous, because it leaves the society open to somebody just saying, you know what, if I want to, there's an open apartment down the hall, nobody's living there, you know what, it's okay, and it's not only okay, but legally I'll have tenant and I'll have right to it. Housing's not a right. Housing is a choice. You don't have to choose to live. You choose to live in New York City. You could go any other place you want to. You don't have to live here.
Rob Robinson,
I don't care where you live in this world. Housing is a human right, and it's time our governments stood up to that right. These movements aren't only happening here in New York City, not only happening here in the United States. They're happening in Paris, France. They're happening in Toronto. People are starting to understand that housing is a human right. Maybe if we decommodified housing, then we wouldn't have to take back the land. But we're taking back the land because a government will neglect its obligation to house people. New York City spends $750 million a year to put people in shelters. That is the most ridiculous statement anybody can say. You can take $750 million a year and start to build some permanent housing. It makes no sense. The government, people are resistant to change. Our government obviously is resistant to change. And sometimes you have to force change upon somebody. And that's what this movement is doing, forcing change.
I agree with your statement in the sense that the government could be spending that money a lot better, and I agree with you in that sense. But I think in what you're attempting to do, basically every man for himself and every square piece of space is available, isn't the way to go about doing it. You could do a lot better time with your effort to put it towards a legitimate use of trying to fix the housing problem, which I do agree there's definitely an issue and there's definitely a homeless issue with it. I don't think that, and I don't believe that this is the way to go about
it. It's not only homeless people, it's working people that are being excluded. Gentrification is forcing people out of neighborhoods, period.
David, thank you for your call. And Benton in Harlem, I think, has an issue with some squatters who live near him. Hi, Benton.
Hello. Yeah, I live next door, and there was a comment made earlier about the house, the Trump housing, and I absolutely agree with that these huge skyscrapers that are half finished, they become public eyesores, if nothing else, and I do believe that they should be occupied. But on a basic level of just responsibility, I live right next door to a housing community that's a bunch of squatters, and they don't take care of anything. There's garbage that will pile up. There's become a rat infestation. They keep pit bulls in the backyard that become violent. One of the pit bulls just killed another pit bull 4 days ago. And at the end of the day, there's no responsibility whatsoever. The police come, they can't do anything. The SPCA comes, they can't do anything because all they have to do is not open their doors. And there's no responsibility. But as a homeowner living right next door, if I were to do the same things, it would be some kind of responsibility, some kind of action that would be taken. So that's my real concern about squatters is at the end of the day, there's no one to point to say, okay, you are responsible for X, Y, and Z.
Rob, you want to talk to Benton too?
Yeah, I can't speak for those folks squatting in that particular space, but I can tell you the reason why Picture the Homeless spent the money to go down to take back the land and learn from those folks is because it's responsible squatting. They have an interview with the family. They go through an intake process. families have to be able to turn on electricity, have to be able to turn water on in those houses that they're taking over. They have to have conversations with their neighbors. The neighbors are in favor of folks moving in to move out the very people that you're talking about. Picture right. The homeless would follow the same methods and ideology that take back the land is using in Miami.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. Andrew Riker, wasn't your group able to use the activist energy, squatters energy, to gain politicians' ears and create permanent housing within the system? Because to some degree, it's being framed here as an either-or.
Right. And in this particular case, there were 11 buildings that joined together and came to us and said, you know, we've been here, some of them 10 and 20 years.
That's Lower East Side.
On the Lower East Side and already fixed up their buildings, and we're taking some care of them. And over time, the city had removed squatters from some buildings on the Lower East Side. But when we asked then the Giuliani administration, they said, sure, the buildings need to be brought back up to code. The buildings will need to be limited equity co-ops. They'll need to be permanently affordable. And you know, this is what you can do. And the government, other than providing the building and some tax abatement, wasn't going to provide any resources.
Right.
It was on the back
and
of
you
the
know what? We are out of time, but I think this has been a fascinating conversation and some new stuff for a lot of the listeners out there who might remember, if they're old enough, some of the squatting movements from the 70s and the 80s and even the early 90s. Squatting is back in a different form in this economy, and we thank all three of you. Rob Robinson from the housing campaign of Picture the Homeless, Frank Morales, Episcopal priest involved in the East Village and Lower East Side squatting and homelessness activism since the 70s, and Andrew Riker, executive director of the Urban Homesteading Assistance Board. Thanks to all
three
of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Brian
Lehrer
on WNYC. Still to come, internet activism 6 months after the election. And we will look into the land of invented languages from Esperanto to Klingon. Stay with us.